Hi, welcome to this episode of the Charity Charge Show. Today, I have Jeff Mazur, who is the Executive Director of Launch Code. Jeff, thank you so much for being on this episode.
Thank you, Stephen. It's really good to be here.
Sure. To kick things off, tell us, what is the mission of Launch Code? And can you give us a bit of the background on its history and the formation of Launch Code?
Yeah, for sure. So at Launch Code, our mission is to build a skilled workforce by creating pathways for driven people seeking careers in technology. And that's a really long way of saying that our organization was created as a solution to this pretty profound problem that we have in the US and beyond around the tech workforce and the lack of skilled, trained, ready people to do technology jobs. So Launch Code was founded, really formally founded in late 2014. And it was founded by a guy named Jim McKelvey, who also is the founder of a company called Square, mobile payment system company that many people are probably familiar with. And Jim is and was a St. Louis guy. He really wanted to have the development team that built the platform for Square in St. Louis because he knew those are really good jobs, could change people's lives, be a great thing to have in St. Louis. But his experience was he couldn't hire developers quickly enough to build the platform at the rate he needed for the company to thrive. And so ultimately, those jobs moved to Silicon Valley, where they largely exist today. And so one of the things that Jim came out of that experience with was the recognition that there should be a way for people in a place like St. Louis, which is where we are founded and where we are headquartered, to be able to gain the skills that are necessary and do this work for companies like his. And so he created Launch Code as a mechanism for doing that. And the core premise is, and was at the time, find people who have skills, maybe with non-traditional credentials or who don't have a typical background or experience, or give people skills for free that allow them to step into these roles and then make a connection for employers to these people, serve as sort of a credential in another way for these people so that they have credibility with these employers who are trying to find technologists, developers. And that model, though it's evolved over time, and though it's expanded, is responsible for our having initiated about 3,000 technology careers now over the last 8 years. So that's really the core premise of Launch Code. And the world that we're trying to bring about is just, in its simplest form, one where anybody who is interested in a career in technology and is willing to work hard actually has the opportunity to do that and isn't roped off from those things because they don't have the money to pay for skills, or they don't have a rich stable of contacts already that can help them get entree to the field. So that's really what we build all our programs to try and facilitate.
Tell us, when you talk about those 3,000 individuals that you've, you know, helped place into tech careers now, what are some of the practical trainings or what's part of the program? You know, if someone was interested in a career in tech, kind of walk us through that journey. Yeah. Of how they interact with your organization ultimately to going on to have that career in tech.
Yeah, for sure. So we really started the middle of the target when we started this was trying to get people jobs as full stack software developers or web developers. And so we really started with and continue to maintain today a core curriculum that's focused on giving people fundamental skills in programming, usually taught in JavaScript, sometimes Python. And then more job-focused skills in oftentimes Java or C#. And we still do a lot of that. A lot of the programs we teach are designed to help people start careers as software engineers. But we also recognize through that process that there are jobs that are slightly different from software engineer that people can do by virtue of having gained those particular skills. And there are a bunch of other skills and jobs that are in high demand that we are really well positioned to train people for. So over time, we've expanded from that full stack developer focus to also include things like product management. We see that as a huge space where employers are typically looking for people to lead teams in an agile methodology, help bring product, iterate product, integrate research, and do all those things. And we train people to do that now, oftentimes who already have developer skills or who are building developer skills at the same time. Another big one has been data and data analysis. We know that's a growing space, and we know that some of the technologies that we teach are really good tools for helping bring people into data careers. And so that's a thing that we do a lot more of now. And then we do branch into some other spaces as well, some low code platforms and teaching people to become Salesforce administrators and Salesforce developers, sometimes becoming developers in legacy systems like COBOL and other mainframe systems. So the core of it though is understanding what the need of our employer partners are and what the employment universe is in the place we work, whether it's St. Louis or Philadelphia or Kansas City or Florida or anywhere else, and really trying to quickly develop in people the skills that those employers need and want to bring people in at the entry level or the junior level onto their teams. And if someone is interested in a career like that and they want to earn these skills, we try to make that process as simple for them as possible. Obviously, everything we do is through our platform online. And typically, someone will apply for one of our learning programs and they do that online. We do a little aptitude test through HackerRank to understand what their proficiency is for logical reasoning and problem solving. We dig into some short answer questions to really understand if someone is driven to understand and work in technology, understand why, where their passion comes from in that space, and then really try and understand if there's someone who has what we refer to in the shorthand as drive. Are they willing to work hard in an intensive program? Are they able to push through when things really get hard? Because they do get hard. And oftentimes someone's first impulse is to give up. Is this the sort of person who's able to push through those difficulties? And we find those people who demonstrate those traits and then we put them into our program. And someone's experience in the program is going to differ. We run a variety of different models, but by and large, it's usually a part-time program where someone is doing 6 hours of synchronous learning time, usually in the evenings with fellow learners, and they're committing 15 hours a week beyond those 6 hours to learning on their own and doing the assignments. And over the course of 25 weeks, they're going to gain the skills that are necessary to move into a first job as a developer or a data analyst. And we have some other program models too that are more condensed and more full-time. But the bottom line is we want those programs to be opportunities for someone who perhaps can't afford to pay to gain those skills, to still be able to access them, and for the programs to be deployed in a way that allows people who have other, oftentimes full-time responsibilities, to access the program. Maybe they have to care for family. Maybe they have a full-time job already or two part-time jobs to put food on the table. But the critical element is, are these skills that will help them get a job? Are they skills that we can give those, that person for free? And are they skills that we can give that person in a way they can actually access them? And that's our North Star for how we want to give this opportunity to people. And then the person who applies, goes through the program, completes it, we will hopefully, if they want to participate, we will try to place them with one of our employer partners. And there we work with a couple hundred different employers who have a need for talented people in the tech space. And we work in a variety of different ways to link those people to opportunities within those companies. And hopefully, if we do it if we do our job right and find a right candidate for a right position, and if we've helped give people the skills that are necessary, they'll be able to be successful in those roles and launch a really great career in tech.
That's awesome. Can you share with us any particular anecdotes or any stories that sort of exemplify, you know, what you just shared in a specific way?
Yeah, for sure. And the ones that I hear most recently always spring immediately to top of mind, but actually just did a graduation for one of our programs this past Monday evening. It was a program we call Women Plus for a cohort of this program in Kansas City, people who are graduating from a data analysis track or a product management track in that program. And we had a previous graduate as a guest speaker for the graduation. And this is a woman who, you know, talked really candidly about her experience in life prior to LaunchCode and what her life and career has been since then. And it's a story that resonated with me because it's not necessarily spectacular, but it's not uncommon. Mm-hmm. And this woman, her name is Ashley. Her story was, I was doing other non-technical work. I realized that was not a pathway that was going to be fulfilling for me, that was going to take mm-hmm. me into a career. I started teaching myself to code using a variety of cobbled together online resources and other things. And she said it wasn't working for her. She knew she wanted to do it. She knew she could find things that were geared towards helping her do that. But The sequence in which you found them, understanding how they fit together, having the help or the guidance, the mentorship, the partnership with other learners that really she felt like was necessary for, wasn't a part of what she was able to find. And so she happened across Launch Code. She actually applied a couple times, actually started a program once or twice and didn't complete it, but came back again and again, and finally did sort of learn that she didn't know previously how to study and what it meant to really study and focus. But she learned that life skill in addition to the technical skills through this process. And she made it through and she wound up getting a job. She works today as a developer for Charter Spectrum. And so she just shared her experience with these learners in a way that was both so genuine and authentic in that it was vulnerable about what the real challenges are of finding work in this space, and that spoke so clearly to what I think so many people who are interested in a career in technology but are apprehensive about pursuing it. What she said is exactly what those people need to hear, that you can do this, you can have false starts, you don't have to know all the answers, you just have to want to do it and then be willing to find the place and the people that can help you do that. And I think if I really think about what it is we provide at Launch Code, I know that people can find curriculum resources elsewhere around JavaScript and Java. I know that they can go to the job boards and they can find employers who are hiring, the same employer partners that we work with. The question is, can they go to a place where they can really be made to feel like they belong in this space because of the experience they have with other learners, because of the experience they have with mentors, with people who've been down this road before to help them through it? And I think that's what we're really trying to provide. There is no magic in the skill or in the training. It's really about helping people find that thing within themselves that they know is there, but they're not sure how to unlock. And her story was just such a great illustration of that, that it's one that I love to share. And I think there are probably 1,000 stories that are some permutation of Ashley's experience out there in the world. And I think that's what we're really trying to do, because invariably, like the most extravagant story or the most maybe compelling story, the most unique story, that's always going to be an edge case, right? And we're trying to build a workforce. We want to understand how the regular ordinary person has a regular ordinary opportunity to step into an extraordinary thing. And so those stories like that really get me every time. And so that's an anecdote of Ashley, who's at Charter and who we love and who I hope will speak at a future Launch Code graduation for all those same reasons.
I appreciate you sharing that. And I really love just seeing the smile on your face when you talk about that. I think that that is just such a fulfilling thing, I'm sure, for you. And it's, you know, a big reason why I love doing this podcast, just hearing and being around people like yourself that are inspired, you know, with the work that they're doing. To that end, I'm curious if you could share, you know, as being the leader of Launch Code and being this executive director role, what, you know, and I'm sure there's many, but is there any big lessons or advice you might give to someone else that might consider or might be become in the future an executive director? Or maybe a different way to put the question is, you know, what has been surprising to you? Like what, since being the executive director of Launch Code, what was it kind of unexpected, but you kind of realized was going to be part of the role?
I think in a very general sense, I can speak to some specific kind of things that are a part of this. But at the most conceptual level, like the biggest lesson that I've learned, and I guess it's fair to say I'm surprised by it, is that what I've learned is that the longer I do the work, the less and less I know. And that's actually a good thing that I should want to be true and that I want to be comfortable with as a leader. That as we do more and as we try and grow, there are new things that I ultimately am responsible for making decisions about that are entirely unexplored in the prior history of the organization and my tenure with it. And I don't know the answers to those things. And that's okay. Learning the answers and coming up with what we think are the best solutions with the people around me is sort of the highest order work that I can do in the organization. And I think that's somewhat surprising, or maybe surprising to some people, and maybe it's surprising to me in some ways, because you know, the assumption might be, well, hey, in the first year, you're going to find some things that you never did before, and that's going to be new. In the second year, you're going to kind of get it down. In the third, fourth year, fifth year, by the time you're fifth year, it's all old hat, right? And you're just using the things that you know to do this role and do it well. But I think that's not true. And I think if it were true, it would be a signal to me that I and we as leaders weren't pushing the organization to do enough new things or to change itself and evolve and grow and figure out how to test the edges of the space that we work in. And so that's really the thing. And I think honestly, in terms of my own personal growth and learning at the outset of this adventure in this role, I think I probably would have been pretty reticent to say to people, you know what, I'm proud not to know the answers to this, or I know less and less each day about this work. But as I reach, you know, 5 years as executive director this summer, it is one of the things that I'm proud of. And I think those of us who have lived into that approach or accepted it as a part of our life and work, I feel like we're much better situated to deal with the drastic and vast uncertainty that was presented by the last 2 years. Because all of a sudden, all of us, no matter how long we've been in our roles, were presented with situations that no one had seen before and for which there were no rote answers. And so I think really embracing that idea that we can't know it all, we won't ever know it all. In fact, we probably know less as we go along is a really powerful way for us to induce ourselves to keep growing, to induce other people to lead with their own ideas and to feel comfortable stepping into that space and to bring people along and solving problems together. So I guess that's the one that I did.
Yeah. Well, I really love you that you shared that, because it kind of jives with some of the key things that I've learned more and more in starting and running Charity Charge and just, you know, growing into adulthood and whatnot. But, you know, it's just kind of the saying, it's not what you know, it's what you don't know, you know? And then also it's not about unknowns, but it's like unknown unknowns, you know?
Yeah.
And you start to realize that there's just so little that we truly know in any situation. And the more you can have humility out that, it actually makes you be smarter to think about, you know, all scenarios, right? And like, and then, you know, I think the positive thing about life too, and I'm kind of giving it from my perspective here, yeah. This interview is about you, but you know, what possibilities are possible, and like what possibilities are possible that I don't even know are possible.
Yeah.
And then you could start getting into like a really get your creative thoughts going and try to like get out of crazy situations and tough situations that you're presented with.
I think that's exactly right, Stephen. And just this idea that these organizations are living things, not just because of the people who populate them, whether as participants or staff, but they're things that play a role in the world. And as the world changes around us, the role that they perhaps need to play in order to be the most effective advocates for their mission may well need to change. And if we're not sensitive to that, if we think we know the answer in advance of seeing the question, then we're never going to identify what those opportunities are. And we're never going to allow the thing to mold itself in the direction of optimal work and optimal impact.
Right. Can you talk to us? I'm curious, you know, I've seen a lot of organizations over the years that, you know, some are founded, let me back up a step and just say, there's, you know, if you look at the nonprofit sector just in the U.S. alone, it's extremely diverse. It represents a significant percentage of the overall U.S. economy, you know, in terms of just expenditures, in terms of employees. And there are so many different organizations all across the U.S., a variety of employee sizes, revenue sizes, missions, et cetera. Your organization was founded, you had mentioned, by Jim McKelvey, co-founder of Square. So when an organization is started by someone who I can only imagine of Jim's, you know, means, what has been the goal for financial stability of the organization? And can you talk at all about your business model? I mean, I just look at like you're providing and creating so much value for these employers. I'm wondering, do they sort of subscribe? Are they corporate supporters? How does one, you know, started the organization, maybe provided some seed capital to get it going, but what does sustainability look like now?
Yeah, well, let me add two parts of that question. And I thank you for asking it. And I want to really give both their due. The first, because I think it's a great question about Jim as a founder. And I want to give Jim a great deal of credit in this regard about the founding of this organization. Now, Jim is someone today, by virtue of having founded Square, who's worth probably $4 billion. There is no question that he could just fund an organization of our size and make it go. But his goal from the very first day that he founded it was for that not to be the case. And indeed, I don't think it was until the organization was maybe 3 years old or so before he made his first cash gift to the organization, because Jim at his heart views himself as an inventor and an entrepreneur. And his view was, this has to be a thing that is going to work because it works in the marketplace. And if we provide value to employers in the way we create talent and work with them to basically pay the freight for that talent, then this thing is going to work and it's going to grow and it's going to thrive because it meets those market needs. And so, though I'm sure my predecessors, the people who were responsible for building the organization from day one, in many ways probably thought, oh boy, I just wish someone would put a little money on the table here to really get this thing rolling. It surely would have made life easier in a lot of ways. I think that impulse at the outset and what that forced the organization to do and become is largely responsible for having put us on a path to sustainability that is leads to growth and that has been really genuinely sustainable as we reach year 8 or 9 of the organization's life. And to give you a sort of level deeper in that in terms of how it works mechanically, because we provide all this stuff free of charge to the learner, you have to pay for it somehow, right? It is not cheap to train people to code. It's not cheap to build the infrastructure that's necessary to get people jobs with employers. We have a sales team that works with employer partners to build those relationships and to grow that business. We have to pay for that somehow to make the organization work. And how we do that, by and large, is through an earned revenue stream that's generated through our partnership with our employers. And most of the time, that looks like employers bringing on a LaunchCode graduate as effectively a temp to hire contract worker to do the work for them while they work on LaunchCode's books. And we pay the wage and benefit and we bill the employer an hourly bill rate for that person's work. And through that financial relationship, we're able to cover our costs. We're able to provide that job for the candidate. We're able to provide that worker for the employer, and we're able to pay that wage to the candidate while they do that apprenticeship, while they do that job. And that insight that we could build a financial model that relied on a couple things, that relied on a model that employers were already tremendously comfortable with because of their history of working, many of them with tech staffing firms and other tech recruiters that use a similar model to bring people in on a contingent workforce basis. Because we were able to tap into that experience, we were able to create a sustainable revenue model for our organization. And, you know, when I took over as executive director 2017, I think the previous years, revenue receipts for the organization overall was maybe $3.8 million. In 2021, total receipts were in the neighborhood of $18 million. So, you know, over a relatively short period of time, by virtue of this model and our sort of going all in on this model, that was what was able to create a sustainable financial base for the organization to work from. And do we still count on, in many important ways, philanthropy as a part of what we do? Absolutely. I think we probably received, of those 18 million in revenues receipts in 2021, probably $3 million or thereabouts came from philanthropic support or public support from a state or what have you, which is substantial. But it's a relatively small share of the overall funds that flowed into the organization. And I think that insight that we could grow by providing value in the market and letting employers pay for it has been the one that's meant us always sort of struggling and thinking about payroll 3 months down the road to one now where we don't have those sorts of concerns anymore. We can focus really on growth and amplifying impact.
That's amazing. What incredible growth that you all have had. Really, really cool that you all have figured this out. To that point, I mean, I know you were talking about it, but, you know, if there's individuals listening or people that, you know, either are, you know, individuals looking that want to go to have a career in tech, or people that are running companies that are looking to recruit, how can people get involved? How can they support your organization? Where can they learn more?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Stephen. So all our various aspects of our work live at launchcode.org, launchcode.org. And on the employer side, we exist to provide the talent that you need. So come in, take a look. There's various ways we can work with you to bring people who've already come through our programs and put them in a role that you have open today. We do lots of other things with our employer partners as well that are more consultative in nature. We can build programs and recruit learners and give them certain very specific technical skills that you need and then onboard them to your organization. So there are lots of powerful solutions that we can work with you to develop something that really speaks to the specific bespoke needs of an employer. And then on the participant side, if you're someone who has tech skills already, maybe you went through you got a 2-year associate's degree in application development, right? But you haven't been able to parlay that into a job. We'll work with you at LaunchCode. We'll come, we'll assess your skills, and we will connect you to our employer partners for a potential apprenticeship placement or job placement through our system, even if you didn't learn those skills from us. So you can come and you can do that application today if that describes your experience. If you're someone who's just interested in tech, but doesn't have job-ready tech skills already, we run a bunch of programs that are designed to give you those skills. So you can go to launchcode.org/learn, LEARN. You can learn about all the different programs that we have there, the application timeline for various programs, and figure out whether that's something that you want to apply for and try and get yourself into. And then if you're someone who, either because you work in the tech space and you want to support what we're doing, or you're just someone who loves to volunteer or support organizations that do good work, there are great ways. We love to have volunteers. Oftentimes we're asking volunteers to do resume review with our learners as they conclude their learning process, or mock behavioral interviews with our learners as they conclude their process. We're always looking for, if you have tech skills and you're working in the industry, instructors, lead instructors, teaching fellows who help help mentor our students through our part-time programs. We'd love to work with you on that. And then if you want to give money, like I said, we rely on the support of donors, big and small. You can give money at launchcode.org/donate. And those dollars, by virtue of the way our model works, we are able to take those dollars and make sure we put them into supporting free, accessible programming that's going to go to someone who really, we know, has the aptitude and drive and passion to be successful in this space. So every dollar that we can do helps us get a little closer to put one more person in one of those programs.
That's awesome. Well said. I so appreciate you being on this episode, Jeff. Thank you very much for being here.
Pleasure's all mine, Stephen. Thanks for letting us talk about LaunchCode. It's my very favorite thing to do.
I can tell that. And I just think it's really just extraordinary. I was not aware of the revenue growth that you all have experienced, over the past, number of years. It's pretty incredible. I want to actually kind of ask like a little bit of a bonus question here, because, I think in this interview, you touched on a lot of ways that everyone at the organization, from its founder to its board, to your involvement and whatnot, have been able to think creatively and with an open mind, and also kind of buck the trend. Like, especially I love the entrepreneurial DNA, from day one of the organization, that Jim had instilled into it. And that's clear that that's carried it through. On the other hand, unfortunately, there's a lot of organizations, nonprofits, that just like for-profit businesses, they go out of business, and they're not able to grow. They're not able to do it. So, if someone is listening to this episode and say they're running an organization that's been around for, whatever it's been, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, but they're just kind of like puttering along, what do you say to them? I mean, have you interacted with any organizations, and executive directors that you've been able to help or coach or give advice to in the St. Louis area?
I answered the question.
It makes me wonder too. It's like, it's kind of a bigger question too. And I'm like laying this all out, and you could kind of, and it's kind of not just a direct question, but it's sort of just a response. Because it makes me think about, I'm going to be off on these statistics in the exact percentages, but there's the old, like, kind of, if you Google, like, I'll even do it right now, failure rate of businesses in US, right? And so this is what's interesting. According to US Bureau of Labor Statistics, 20% of new businesses fail during the first 2 years of being open. 45% during the first 5 years and 65% during the first 10 years. Only 25% of new businesses make it to 15 years or more. But I'm surprised. I think that those are a little bit less. But even of those 25%, so many of them are barely turning a profit, right?
Yeah.
Right? It's like people that are just working in the business, you know, with whatever it could be, a 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 person business. Someone's dedicated their whole life to it, but they're, after they pay all their expenses and all their employees, they're really barely scraping by. I mean, they're not, you know, out there in the Caribbean on a yacht or something. Sure. So why is that? You know, and I think that same phenomenon applies to nonprofits too.
Yeah. Oh, first, let me say, you asked me before what the biggest lesson that I've learned in this role is, and that's that for most things, the answer is very much, I don't know. And this probably falls into that category of things, right? But I will venture a couple guesses here, and I will share what my posture is or my sort of constitutional belief is about this. And that is that there are lots of different ways to fail, right? And what I say there is, look, it may be that that business that you talk about, that's a for-profit business that's barely scraping by, to pay its employees to keep the doors open. It may be that that's not a failure at all, right? Like we tend to lift up the examples of the companies that scale and that are the most grand successes as the thing that everyone aspires to. But there's a place for businesses that just exist so that people can support themselves, right? And that may be all a person is seeking. And if that's the case, then you know, maybe that's a failure of one kind, but it's a success of another kind. I will say in the nonprofit space, we can think about failure a little bit differently. Like, I think there is every reason to believe that there are nonprofits that are sustainable, but that are still failing. And what I mean by that is they may float, but it, to the degree that your organization or institution exists solely largely as a means to perpetuate itself, rather than to really advance or make progress on the mission that it exists to create, then that's probably failure of a different kind, even if it's successful from a P&L statement perspective, right? And I'm not sure that's the sort of highest order work that someone could be committing themselves to. So, and then there are failures of nonprofit that may be entirely owing to the fact that somebody wanted to do a really bold, important and necessary thing, and they just couldn't find the right model to make it work. And I could envision one alternative universe in which that was true of LaunchCode, right? That we wanted to do this great thing, but we never stumbled upon, or no one ever had the great idea to try this thing about this business model, this revenue model that ultimately made it work. The core, the value of what LaunchCode hoped to achieve in its mission would have been no less in that instance than it is today. It's just the sort of function of maybe a happy accident that we stumbled across a way to make it work. And so I guess that person who's in that instance of leading an organization that maybe is going through difficult times is to really urge them to think about what success means for them. Success may well be simply putting themselves every day into a situation that is advancing a really important issue, even though tomorrow is not a certainty in terms of the organization's ability to continue operating and do that work. And that's noble in its own way, in a lot of senses. So, I know that's a really circuitous answer to a simple question, but I think we all are looking to achieve different things, and it can always be determined by the longevity of the organization or the business or the bottom line.
Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. And thanks for going there. Jeff, thanks again for being on this episode of the Charity Charge Show. Jeff Mazur, Executive Director of LaunchCode. Thank you to everyone who continues to listen to the Charity Charge Show. Until next time, take care.